All right, everybody, welcome to the Groundwork Podcast. This is the first podcast we're doing under our new name, which is Groundwork. So we're just kind of working on that. And we also have our guest here. I'm going to introduce our guest, and we're going to talk about now Groundwork. We're just kind of talking about church planting, our experiences as church planters. And there's a lot of information that you're going to get here. If you're a church planter, there's a lot of good information that will come from that. If you're not a church planter, you're just part of a small church. There's a lot of value, I think, that you're going to get from this. And if you're going to a church and you just want to kind of listen in on the conversations that we have as church planters, this is going to be a lot of fun. And so we're glad you're here. Now, today we have a guest that we want to introduce to you. And he's a church planter, and he was raised in Bakersfield, California, entering the foster care system at age 12. And he experienced some of the challenges firsthand, some of the challenges and resilience that shape a young person's faith and character. And it was at the First Pentecostal Church of Bakersfield, under the leadership of Pastor Leon Frost, later on Pastor Kevin Bradford, that he first encountered God and began to walk with the Lord. So after years of this, he became and answered the call to establish Revival Center in Bakersfield. And this is a church that's devoted to reaching the lost, restoring hope, equipping believers to walk in their calling. And so his life and ministry stand as a testimony of God's grace and the power of perseverance and all this really cool stuff that he told me to say. But here he is, Pastor Bryce Cosme. We're glad you're here. Thank you for coming.
Well, thank you guys for having me. Appreciate it.
Okay. So I just want to kind of start with where you're at in Bakersfield. How long have you been there? And what's going on, and what are your plans for your future?
So, I'm in Bakersfield. I've been in Bakersfield my whole life, born and raised in Bakersfield. When I was 12 years old, I got into church, Pastor Leon Frost at the time. And then a few years later, it went over to Pastor Bradford, and that's who I'm working with now. So I went there for I've been in church now for like 19 years. Before COVID, I had went out to start a church in LA County, or just outside of LA County, right on the border of LA County in a city called Roseman. COVID hit and everything got shut down with our business and our church and everything got shut down. So I came back. Then I started traveling and preaching for about a year and a half. And there was a church that had opened up in Illinois that wanted me to be their pastor. And they called my pastor. And long story short, it was not a big church. It was a small church, nice building, but a small church. And so they had asked my pastor what he thought about it. When I got back, I preached a summer revival at my home church. This is, I think, 3 or 4 years ago now. And he had just told me, you know, instead of going all the way across the country to go do something, you might, you know, not like or may not work out, and then you end up having to move back. Why don't we plan on starting a church in Bakersfield? And so me and my pastor, Pastor Kevin Bradford, we worked on the idea of getting a church started on the west side of Bakersfield. For the first year, we had a team help me, which was good for me. And just having, you know, no experience with sound systems, having no experience with a lot of computer programs and software and just church things and learning. So it was a learning curve for the first year with that team. And then at the end of that year, they all went back to the home church, whatever they had going on over there. And then we started. Interestingly enough, we didn't have any people after the first year with that team. There was no people that were a part of our church. We had a lot of outreach. We had a lot of barbecues. We did a lot of events, but nobody really stuck. But now I think it was good looking back because it just showed me that, you know, it's not necessarily about who you have on your team. It's really who's committed to your church and who wants to be there for the long haul. So that was a good experience for me, was just who's a part of your team, who can you count on, and who's there for you, you know, when the smoke settles and the dust clears, and that's what you have.
Okay. So, I want to interrupt because I want you to finish your story here.
Yeah. Go ahead.
We're kind of in many ways in the same boat, the three of us here. We're trying to reach our cities and grow our churches and get to like 1,000 members in the next 60
right. days. And like the next 2 months.
Yeah. That's going to be very hard. Okay. What's that?
I was thinking 30 days.
Yeah, exactly. So we're all very ambitious, but there are challenges to all of this. So at the very beginning, what are some things you did at the very beginning to kind of just get the ball rolling? You said you start with no people.
Yeah. So like I said, after kind of the launch team was with me for a year, and then they went back, and then we were on our own. Just had to start getting creative. The way I explain it is you're a little dog trying to throw a big shadow on the wall, you know, trying to make yourself look bigger than you are, which is good, but sometimes doesn't work. So what we're trying to do was barbecues are good. They're still good to this day. We got one on October 24th, barbecue coming up. That's been good.
October 24th, if you're in the Bakersfield area, make sure you stop by for the barbecue. Give them the address so they know where to go.
It'll be at River Lakes Ranch Park, October 24th at probably 7 p.m.
Awesome.
So do you do anything spiritual with these barbecues, or what actually happens?
No, not necessarily. Just pray for the food and eat it. That's about as spiritual as it gets.
Those are spiritual things.
I think the issue is when you first start a church small is that people are showing up looking for what you have to offer them. And just to be honest, if it's, you know, you and your wife and your kids, there's not a whole lot to offer to, as far as programs and things like that. You know, there's only, I think, once or twice that there was nobody there except for me and my family. I know for sure one time, maybe twice. And it's just tough, because what if you get, you know, the visitor that's just looking for a church and ready to commit and serve, but they're like, I'll come back when you guys have more people. So it was tough. And so we got into just some heavy door knocking. I did heavy door knocking for about 3 months, just like nonstop every Saturday, 3 or 4 hours a day, just knocking, doing surveys, talking to people at their doors.
Surveys did you do?
I made a really simple one. I might have copied it from somebody. So if this is your survey, sorry, but I just try to adjust things to how I like them. But question number one was, do you believe in God? And usually it was yes. Number two, do you believe in having a relationship with God? Number three, do you believe in heaven? And they would say yes or whatever. And then the fourth question was, if you died tonight, are you 100% sure you'd make it to heaven? And they would say yes, or they would say no. And then I would say, well, hey, can I just give you a couple Bible verses to talk to you a little bit more about that? And I would, you know, tell them about John chapter 3. I'd tell them about Acts chapter 2, Acts chapter 8, chapter 19, things like that. And just try to get a conversation going. It was a lot of doors, not a lot of surveys, but it was good. Again, even looking back on that, it was good. So there was a guy sitting on his porch, and he didn't want us to walk up to his door. He just said, oh, no, I'm fine. You don't have to worry about me. And I said, well, do you just have a quick second for a survey? And I'm on the sidewalk, and he's up at his porch. And I was able to go up to him. This is January 3 years ago. Three Januaries ago, and I went up to him, gave him the survey. Well, it turned out that he had been backslidden. He was an apostolic. He was backslidden for about 25, 30 years. And he came to church not that long afterwards. And he's still in church with us even today. He was in church yesterday, him and his family. And so, you know, it worked. It's just hard, because literally you're trying to get people to show up to something, to just be honest with you, is not that good to show up to. I mean, there's some services, right? I don't even know how these people came back the next week, but they did.
All right. So as you got more people coming, right, as you began to grow, I've followed you on social media, and I've seen, you know, what is it, 20 or 30 some baptized this year. You've been baptizing a lot, or maybe even more than that. I remember seeing quite an uptick and stuff like that. So after people start coming, right, what do you do to get them to buy in terms of staying along for the ride, helping out with providing other things for individuals? What are some things that you do to keep them on the team?
Yeah, so we kind of came up with an idea. I'm still working on it. I'm refining it, but we kind of came up with like a 5-step process of just where people are at. And it's not necessarily like we're always thinking about it, but in our meetings that we have with me and the guys that help me, we'll usually start with, you know, they're coming. That means they're visiting. You know, they've been there a few times and then they're consistent. Well, now they're consistent. Well, now they're converted. And now after converted, they're committed. And we kind of go through the process like that. And so the one thing we've really tried to focus in on, and this is something I stress to everybody that helps me, is that it's one thing to get somebody to come to church. It's another thing for somebody to become part of the church. And it's going to be a long process, and especially.
Okay, can I stop you there for a second?
Go ahead.
So you said that there were five. You said there was you were coming.
And I want to say it's coming, consistent, converted, committed, and then I think the last one is commissioned. There's only a few people on the commissioned list, but the commission is those in the ministry that have kind of like.
So okay, so you got coming, converted. Wait a minute.
Coming consistent, converted. Yeah, coming converted, consistent, and then committed, commissioned. And we have a list, a spreadsheet that we put everybody on. We just kind of go through those names and just talk about, you know, what do we do to get somebody, like you're saying, how to get people to coming along, to go along. It's just mainly our relationship with them. I mean, we've got people right now. I've got somebody going to our church that's been coming for a while who is gay. And has been coming this whole time. And I mean, I went to lunch.
You just found out.
No.
You just found out after you became a member. I'm just kidding.
No. I've known, but I mean, even yesterday I went to Taco Bell with him. We had a good time. I mean, he's coming to the altar praying, you know, working with them. He hasn't gotten baptized yet, but he's been there. I mean, he's heard every Bible study. He knows everything we believe. We're always working with him, always talking to him, and he's where he's at. And when he's ready to step up, he's ready to step up, you know, but we have a relationship with him. It's not like, you know, Acts 2:38 and then that's it. And, you know, that's a lot of, I think the issues with Bible studies and discipleship is that people just hit people with Acts 2:38, you know, what's that Bible study? A place prepared for you or into his marvelous light.
Like marvelous more, light, yeah.
The ones that's kind of like a one lesson deal, you know, like a 1 hour Bible study. That's good. But man, you know, there's a lot of discipleship that can happen beyond that. And so I just think like I've told Chris is my main guy. I'll probably mention Chris a couple times, is that it's not enough just to, you know, baptize somebody and then leave them. You know, it's not enough. Just somebody gets the Holy Ghost and then we leave them. We're trying to be committed to them, you know, until they block our numbers and don't want to talk to us anymore. We want to be committed to people. And even the people that don't come to our church anymore, I'm still, as much as I can be, committed to them and trying to stay in touch with them and reaching out to them, because it's just a long game that we're playing. And we're more into the process than we are with the results with these people, because we'll be, you know, pulling our hair out every single week if we're worried about, you know, somebody coming to church or not coming to church, or whether they got baptized or they didn't get baptized. We're trying to look at it from like maybe 10,000 feet up in the air, just, hey, we're trying to keep the process going. We're trying to keep the services going. We're trying to keep people involved. We're trying to make sure we got a list. We got to make sure we're working. We don't forget anybody. We're going back to visit them. Even with the door knocking now, with me and Chris, we go to these apartments. I told them, look, it's not enough just to go to these apartments one time and then they don't see you again for 3 months. You know, if you talked to five people last week, go see those five people this week. You know, go see those five people. I tell them every week, take two people to coffee. That's something we've been working on now for the last few weeks. You know, take two people to coffee, take two people to Taco Bell, take them, you know, out. If you're going to do something, see if you can pick somebody up and spend time with them. And, you know, they may have not been baptized yet. They may not have the Holy Ghost yet. They may still be kind of on the fence of what they're doing, but at least we're spending that time with them so that, you know, 3 a.m, they're going to call us, you know, funeral, we're going to be there, a hard time in their life, hospital visit, we're going to be there. There's a lady named Sandra who we probably visited her at her door for probably three months before she came to church. And now she's been faithful. You know, every service she's been baptized, she's coming. She's, I would say, committed. She lets us know she's going to be there. She lets us know she's not going to be there. But it just took like 3 months of going to her door every single Saturday just to stop by and say hi to her. You know,
and so how long has Chris been with you?
Since January. Well, no, since January is when we got a lot of this started. I would say probably November. I would probably say okay. November. Yeah.
So not even a year yet he's been there with you. So when you look at these five categories that you have here, coming, consistent, converted, committed, commission. I'm wondering, I'm just thinking from my personal thought process here. Is there a point on there, which you say, okay, this person is in this category, they can help with X, Y, and Z. And, you know, this person's commissioned, so they can help in this area. Do you have it kind of broken off in terms of where you have people assisting, helping out, doing stuff, or is that just?
Yeah, and that's definitely, you know, part of it. That's been a learning curve for us, right? It's kind of like, you know, when a country goes into war and they don't have enough soldiers, they just start recruiting everybody they can. And that's kind of home missions for you. You know, we let people do stuff that other churches probably would not let them do it. But yeah. I mean, in some cases, if it's nothing that concerns, you know, spiritual authority or, you know, needing to impart something to others. I mean, if you need to have somebody help you clean the church, I mean, what are you looking for? You know, yeah. Or if, you know, even a photography for a while, you know, we didn't really have anybody to do photography. I ended up just signing somebody up. Hey man, can you push this button and capture some moments from our service? You know, that's really what he's doing and he's there. So, I mean, as much as we can get people involved, there's definitely some things that we don't want people doing if they are not fully on board with what we're all about, because there could be some influence there on the other people that could, you know, maybe they have different beliefs than we do. Maybe they have different ideas than we do. So we don't, I think anything that includes influence, I would probably say we need to really watch those. But as far as anything that just includes involvement and being there and, you know, setting up or, you know, even sharing a testimony, that's fine. I've let people share their testimony as long as I kind of knew what it was going to be before I asked them to come up and give it. But I mean, there's different things people can do, you know, with outreach and even, connecting. I'm okay with that. Like people connecting, getting together, you know, even the going out to, you know, get coffee a couple times a week. That's fine. I can challenge people to do that. I would say for me, just the commission part is just that you feel like that they are really, like they consider themselves a part of your church for the long haul. And that's even something I've told people, because you'll get people that want to be involved all the time and they want to do this and they want to do that. And pretty much what I tell people now is I say, look, I've seen a lot of people come and go, and I just want you to know, and for me to know that you're committed here, and just want, you know, that you don't start doing something and then you leave and then we have a void to fill now, you know, and it's just hard. And so that's something I've kind of communicated with people is, you know, I've seen a lot of people come and I've seen a lot of people go. And so you just need to make sure that this is really what you want to do. This is really how you want to live. This is really what you want to believe. And if you're not ready to do that, you just want to come here, enjoy the service and, you know, shake hands and say amen and leave, that's fine. But as far as just being committed, I think it's just that I can count on you, you know, no matter what, I know you're going to be there.
Something you actually said here earlier that stuck with me was about focusing on the process and not the results. And I like that, because a lot of times what I will do is if I don't see the result I'm looking for, you can get discouraged. You can start thinking, well, why aren't so many people showing up or whatever? But you're saying your focus primarily on the process, getting the processes right. And, you know, doing that, it, you know, makes a big difference in your approach. So, what kind of processes do you kind of are working on or doing that is leading to that?
Well, like I'd say right now, we're trying to open up more opportunities for people to be involved. And with that, I'll give you an example. I just got approved to go into the senior living facility once a month. So that, I don't know when we're going to be scheduling that, but I just got some emails back from them that we're going to be able to do that. So hopefully we can open up opportunities to get people involved. Because I do notice that people are really excited about getting involved and we want them to be involved, but we can't put their involvement above their salvation. You know, let's just say, for instance, I have somebody who's really good at singing and they're an amazing singer, like good enough to sing anywhere. And they have a problem, you know, in their life that I know about, like an addiction to something or, you know, constant battle with something. I don't want to say, well, our church needs your help more than you need to be saved, so you can be up here and you can help and you can be involved and you can do all these things. I need to put them first. And so that's definitely the balance in the process, is you need the help, but they need the help too.
Because at some point it can become a detriment putting them up there too early, right?
Right, yeah.
Well, let's just say you put somebody up there and it looks good. And like I said, the main thing is who's on the team, right? And when you put somebody up there, they're on the team and everybody knows they're on the team. Well, then when they, you know, fall back into something crazy and do something crazy, well, now you've got to make a decision. And let's just say, hey, you know, you were able to sing, but because of this, this, and this, we don't need you to sing for a while. Well, in a small church, you're not able to brush those things off very well because everybody knows that person very personally. You know, at a big church, I went to a big church for, you know, 15, 16 years. You don't have to even talk to certain people if you don't like them. You can go out the other door and park on the other side of the parking lot, right? But at a small church, I mean, they know that person. They talk to them all the time. So they're going to say, hey, why are you not singing? What's going on? What's the deal? So you can end up hurting yourself more by cutting through all that and trying to get somebody up there to help you than, you know, than just waiting and just saying, hey, give it some time. And so it's a balance. It's hard. And you have to test the spirits.
You know, it's interesting too, because I think you're speaking to the fact that what a lot of church planters have to deal with is you have to learn how to do a lot of things. So it's tough. You want someone to come up there and sing or be involved in all those things. Ultimately, that's what you're trying to do. But for your church to do well, you have to learn how to do these things. You know, you may not be a good singer, but when you're starting out, it's not a good idea to think that you're going to go in and the only thing you're going to do is preach and then leave, right? So you, like, there are other things you have to do. Like, you got to be skilled in these particular areas, you know, singing, sound. I mean, if you don't know anything about sound, you have to figure out how to plug this stuff in. You got to figure out how websites and all that kind of stuff work. You got to figure, there's a lot of different things. And I know you, so I know that you, you know, you're just kind of a roll up your sleeves kind of guy and does what needs to be done. But like, what are some things that are essentials that you think like a church planter needs to know outside of just preaching? Some things that are some essentials that you need to be able to do, you need to be able to get and learn as a church planter.
Yeah. So I would say you need to learn how to use the internet in a good professional way. I'm not saying, you know, you don't have to have, you know, the type of content that the Rock Church Sierras is putting out or anything like that. but you do need to be able to pop up on Google if people look for you. You do need to be able to pop up on Facebook and Instagram and be somewhat active. You know, I'm not saying you've got to sit there and be a mastermind, but people need to know that you're open. And I've seen churches where, you know, their Instagram hasn't been updated in 2 years. Their website says this domain is available for sale. you know, and I'm just like, what if that person is, I mean, I just imagine somebody just stumbling upon your church and just, you know, not even sure if you guys are still in operation or not. So I would say you at least have to have some basis of online presence.
Also, if you have, like, let's say you're, you know, churches, if you have a van or something and it's an old van, you can't pay for the repairs to the van. You know, you got to figure out, you got to know how to change your tire. You got to be checking the oil in that thing. And that's not going to come from someone just having the starchy kind of approach of I'm going to walk in there with my suit and my tie on and I'm going to preach. You've got to have some other type of skills, you know?
Yeah. I mean, there was a time when we had we had our biggest service ever this year. It was 85 people. This is like a couple months ago. And I mean, the service is rocking. I'm loving it. I mean, it's so packed. And then someone says, hey, the toilet's plugged. And I'm like, what? Like, yeah, the toilet's plugged. So like mid service, I'm like, hey, I'll be back. Like keep the announcements going for a while. And I'm like, and then the person, I mean, I know this is a podcast, so we don't get too graphic, but I mean, the toilet was fully occupied, and and somebody just expected, I guess, the pastor to show up and deal with that. I mean, I'd like to see how that would unfold in a big church. I'm sure the pastor is not going to come down from the platform and, you know, go deal with that.
But to your point about the website of things, like, we don't have the greatest web presence, but this Sunday in the morning, we had someone travel 40 minutes that no one in our church has ever talked to.
Yeah.
That no one in our church knew. Yeah. And I asked the lady, well, who invited you? How did you find it? She goes, oh, I was looking for a church on the web and came across yours. And I'm sitting there like, praise God, we actually have something up there that she can see. And like you said, notice and know that we're in existence. My guess is, based on the lady, is that she's likely someone that was in some form of apostolic church years ago.
Right.
Maybe married outside of it based on her husband. But then the kids, all they all came and they kind of looked apart. But so she was looking for something very specific online. And because when she came up, our church is set up a little bit differently. We've got an Assemblies of God church in front of us. And then behind in the back parking lot, we rent their old sanctuary. And so they park in the back. And as they walk up, I'm like, so are you here for the Rock Church? Or are you here for one church in the front? They said, oh, no, we're here for the Rock Church. And they knew exactly where they were going and everything. I was like, well, praise God, we've got some sort of presence for them to see that. To your point of, it doesn't have to be the flashiest thing, but you have to have something.
Yeah, and just active. And I'm saying it doesn't even have to be, like I said, the best live stream. I mean, there's mixed opinions on live stream. Sometimes I think it helps, sometimes I think it doesn't. But I think just the fact that people can say, okay, there's something going on there. It is open. I can show up. So I would say, like, basic ground level stuff that pastors should know is that, you need to have some kind of online presence that's going to help you. You never know. Somebody could, I've had some of our biggest offerings come from people that have never even been to our church. Just people that saw what we were doing and how we had certain projects, you know, we needed carpet, you know, for $1,700. We had just somebody just go and just help us with that. When we needed a van, you know, somebody helped us with that. So, I mean, there's just an opportunity just to get your name out there. Even maybe with other people that want to support what you're doing, maybe apostolic pastors or people in your community that just like what you're doing would want to get behind you just by being online. So I would say that's, ground level. I would say the other ground level thing is being able to spend time with people and one-on-one. I think that's a big deal. I honestly believe that's how your church grows, is one-on-one. And, you know, it's the way I think about it now is, you know, I've got a room full of people, but I've got an individual relationship with each of them. They all know me. They probably think my first name is Pastor because that's, you know, what they call me all the time, but just trying to be there for people in life and in hard times and in those things, you know, you're going to want this big, booming apostolic service that's just, you know, like a Friday night conference environment, but it's going to be a long time until you get there. And that's one thing I would say the challenge for me is, you know, I come from a church where, you know, you can show up and there's 500 or 600, 700 people there at any given time, you know, maybe even more depending on the service. And I really feel like God had to knock the big church mentality out of me because, you know, you show up and you want everything that you had at the big church, but it's just so much in the making, you know, even the discipleship, right? Most people in those big churches are born in church. Well, they're already like a level 5 on my chart from the age of 5 years old.
They're commissioned already.
They're commissioned. They were born ready to sing Jesus Said It on Sunday night. You know, they didn't have to have somebody say, hey, you know, you need to work on this. Hey, you need to get this out of your life. Hey, so you just can't compare what they have to what you have. But on the other side of it, I like a small church because there's just a grit to it. I seen a quote. It said that, the wolf on top of the mountain isn't as hungry as the wolf that's climbing up the mountain. And, I just think with our church, there's just a hunger and a desire. I mean, if you come to our church now, it's a good group. I mean, we got a good turnout. I think the last few weeks we've averaged like 41 people consistently. You know, we've had like, I think 70 visitors since the beginning of summer. That's when I started counting visitors. But I mean, before that, when we really didn't have a whole lot of people coming, if you showed up to our church, it's because you really loved God and you really wanted to, you know, be there. It's not, there's no, bells and whistles. There's no, you know, like when I was growing up in the church, a big part of what I did was the Welcome Center and the discipleship at our home church. And there was a lot of people that were coming because there was a girl they liked there, or because there was somebody there that offered them a job, and now they're working for them, and now they want to go to their church to, you know, get in good with their boss. Or maybe they go because the music is great, or because there's a great Sunday school program, or a great event coming up that they, you know, they visited the event, now they're coming. But at a small church, you don't have any of that stuff. You know,
you're just, you know, showing. It's interesting. I think that's an important thing, because I have spent the most of my ministry in big church environments. Now, I've done the small church, you know, I was a small local associate pastor, but I've spent a lot of years in larger church settings, and I've had to adapt to the larger church setting. There's an anonymity that comes from being a larger church. Like you're saying, there's certain people you don't want to talk to them. You just don't have to go there and talk to them. It's like, it's not part of that, but there's a mentality you have to get away from when you go to the size of the church that we are in right now, which is everyone matters and they've all got to be talked to. And like during the week, I don't know what you're doing, but during the week, I'm reaching out to all of these people. And I even have some people now that are helping me do it, but they all need contacted. They all need text. They all need to be prayed with or touched in some way. Sometimes it's not even a spiritual thing, but it's just a call to see how your family's doing. I would never have done such a thing in the big church. I mean, as a music director, I'm not calling members of the choir to say, hey, how you doing? You know, it's just like, it's already there. The ball's rolling, but it is a seismic shift to get down to this, where we're at right now, and being a small church kind of environment. It's a gigantic shift. And, like what type of things do you do during the week to kind of, you know, make, you know, get ready for Sunday like that?
Yeah. So another thing I would, plug in for home missions pastors, if you don't have something like this, is find a one-way group messaging app. The one we use is called Flocknote. It's been really good. I think right now we're paying like $17 a month, and there's like, I don't know, maybe 60 or 70 people on there. I don't add everybody on there. Like if you come one time, you won't get added to there. But if you come a couple times, or if I've had a good conversation with you, I'll put you on there if it seems like you're going to be interested in getting these. But that is just a one-way message that goes out to everybody. I use that for birthdays. Like try to get everybody's birthday so I can say, hey, happy birthday to so-and-so. But the good thing is it goes out to everybody. But when you respond back to me, it doesn't respond to everybody. So you don't end up in this huge chain group thread. But I do that to keep everybody plugged in on the list. And I don't take people off the list. I used to take people off the list, but now I've made a rule. I'm not taking anybody off the list. They can take themselves off the list if they want to get off of there. But I use that just as a way to keep people plugged in, keep them informed. That's another good thing with the recording. If anything, I don't really like live stream because, I mean, there's some moments in our church where you do not want that on live stream. We're going to end up getting screen recorded and posted somewhere for something. Yeah. I mean, I've had to like turn around and like turn the background music off because it came on in the middle of my sermon and it's like full blast, you know, the pre-service prayer music. So, I mean, there's just, you know, maybe live stream is not the best, but I do record everything as a way to send it out to the people that missed, and it's personal. That's another thing, too, I would say with a small church is just focus on the people that are coming to your church. Like, don't try to, like, post stuff that's, like, to the whole nation or to the whole movement or something. Try to, like, really speak to the people in your group. Even I got a couple guys, Chris and Brad, those are the two ministers at our church. We're doing these devotionals twice a week now. I've told them like, look, you're speaking into that camera to the people that either come to our church or the people that are considering coming to our church. So don't, you know, blast a missile off at somebody at some other church that you're trying to get at, or, you know, prove a point about something that's going on in the world, or just, hey, minister to the needs of the people in your church and try to focus on that. I would also say for a small church is you got to be there. You can't be, you know, trying to go to every conference out there. I went to the first conference on Friday night. I haven't been to a conference in like 3 years. I went Friday night to hear Brother Urshan, and it was awesome. In Redlands, we went, I took a group of guys. But even with that, the purpose behind that was I was taking a group of guys that were brand new, getting them encouraged, getting them there, and, you know, spending time with them. So it wasn't, really for the conference as much as it was for those guys. But I would just say you got to get focused on what you're doing, your group of people. You're not trying to impress anybody. You're not trying to prove anything. You're not trying to, you know, seem bigger or cooler or better than anybody else. You're just trying to connect with people. Because I think that's really what I noticed is what started growing our church is when it was all about the people and ministering to their needs and making adjustments based on their needs and working with them, speaking to them, getting to know them. Like not, well, let me do this so I can be, you know, more known, or let me do this so I can be a bigger name. You know, let me really get down to these people's level and care for them. I know where they live. I've been to their door. I spend time with them. I go in their house. I sit down with them. I know them. I've spent, you know, at least two times a week having coffee with them. It changes your perspective. And then even when you preach, it changes your perspective because now you know where people are really living. So you consider that in your, you know, your time of preparing your message, you know what you really need to come across with because you know what people are really going through. So you got to get personal. I would almost say, you probably could make it without an online presence. I know there's some churches out there that don't have very much of an online presence that are very good. You know, they have a great church, but I do not think you can make it without a personal connection, personal relationship right. with people. I mean, you could have the level 10 online presence and no personal connection. That online presence isn't going to help you at all.
Right.
I know people that post on Instagram all the time. And I've asked some people, man, I noticed your church posts a lot on Instagram. Have you had anybody show up to church from Instagram? No, they haven't. And it's just, you know, they're putting stuff out there that the community is just not connecting with. They're putting stuff out there that they want maybe other churches to see or the fellowship to see, which that's all good and well. But if you're really trying to grow a church, everything has to have a return on your investment. Otherwise, you're spinning your wheels and you're not going to grow your church. You might grow your presence online, but you're not going to grow your church. You grow your church through the connections you make with the people in your community.
That's very good. That's very good. I think even the mentality, I was talking about the personal mentality shift that I've had to take, you know, going between the small church and the big church. There's also a different mentality the digital people at the big church, the way that they are posting, because what does a small church typically do? They say, oh, I want to be like the big church. So they copy what the big church does. And they'll see the big church out there posting all these reels and all this stuff. And they're like, okay, we got to be exactly like that. When really a small church really needs to be geared toward its community in a way. And that is a different kind of thinking. In fact, for me, what I like to do is when I post on social media is post pictures and videos and interactions of people that reflect what my community looks like, not necessarily what my church looks like. You know, and you can get criticized by that because people will assume that, well, what kind of church are they running over there? I see all these people that don't look like Christians, but that is strategic because I'm trying to get the community to see that they come to our church. We have people of all different types that come to our church, and we're all at different stages of growth within our church. And so I want them to see the gamut of different people. And that's a mentality shift there. So do you think that the small church in terms of digital strategy needs to be different than that of a big one? And in what ways?
Yeah, I think I think a big church is just showing everybody that their church is, you know, awesome and they've got it going on, you know, and there's so many different camera angles to capture that. I think with a smaller church, you've got to be more strategic of what you're getting done with the posts. Like me, I like posting the preaching clips. It gives people a little snapshot of what our church is all about, the kind of preaching you would hear. I try to show pictures of different people. I always try to include different types of people, demographics of the church, so that they can look at that picture and, you know, see themselves there. Try to post encouraging stuff, mainly on Facebook. On Instagram, we don't have a lot of people from Bakersfield on our Instagram. It's all Facebook, our Facebook stuff. On Facebook, I try to post encouraging stuff, devotional stuff that I can send to people, stuff that's reshareable. Try to just keep people engaged from week to week, you know, from Sunday to Sunday, just keeping them plugged in. like I said, mainly so I can copy the link and share it. I do that pretty much with everything we do. If it's something that we post, I share it with the people that missed. I share it with the people who I know will reshare it. I share it with the people who are on my list that I've been working with that haven't came to church yet. So I think your strategy, it just has to build trust. I would say that's probably the biggest thing with a small church is you're trying to build trust because nobody's been there before. And you're trying to get people to show up and feel comfortable to show up. So it takes time. And I think your strategy with the big church, I think it's, you're not really building trust. Like, you know, First Pentecostal Church of Bakersfield, they have a reputation that's tried and true and everybody knows who they are and what they're all about. A small church, people are trying to figure it out. So I think you're just trying to build trust and let people know you're real people. You can show up. One lady came and said that she read our beliefs because she wanted to make sure that we weren't the snake handling Pentecostals. And I just had to tell her, you know, we're still working on that. We just haven't figured out the logistics on getting the snakes here yet, but you know, we're working on that. It's just, you know, there's certain things we got to figure out about how we're going to keep them at night and you know, all that, but no, just, you know, people really want to know if they could trust your church. I think you just kind of do what you can do, you know, I would definitely say invest in it, you know, and get better cameras, get better equipment. But I think if you're just real, that's better than, you know, trying to put on a show, you know, like trying to edit a photo or you know, make it look a certain way when it's not. You know, I'm worried about that sometimes. It's like somebody would come to our church and say, oh, this is nothing like what it looked like online. I want people to say, oh yeah, this is, you know, what it was like online. Because yesterday we had a lady, her name was Rachel. And she came with her husband and her son yesterday for the first time. And she told us that she's been watching all of our stuff online. She's been watching all the messages. She's been wanting to come. And who knows how long she's been looking at it. You know, she's probably been looking at it for a while. But just trying to be consistent and build trust with people online, I think, is your main strategy when you're a small church. And the big church, I mean, there's all kinds of stuff you can do. You know, you can highlight this ministry. You can highlight that ministry. I mean, the big church, you guys, I don't know if they do this at the Rock Church, but somebody will start a ministry. They'll start their own Instagram for their own ministry just to post what they're doing. You know, there's like seven different Instagram accounts for one church because all these different ministries that are going. So, I mean, the big church, it's just such an ecosystem that's already going. That, right. I mean, no matter what you do, it's probably going to work. It's just, there's just so many people involved.
Right.
A small church, I think you're just trying to build trust and be relatable to the community. And you're trying to show people that you're a real person, you know, you're human, you're not a cult. That's a word people throw out there a lot. You know, you want people to know this is somewhere you can come, bring your family, have a good time. You're going to enjoy it and everybody's going to leave happy. That's what you want.
I think you're speaking to a truth there about being real and authentic and being personable. Like, I don't think I've had anybody come to my church because they said, man, the graphics on your post were so cool. I just thought I had to come to this church because it had the right color scheme on the graphics. But they have come because they've been like, I saw, you know, people that looked like they were genuinely engaged in worship, or they saw a video of me talking and that's what drew them, you know, or even just being out among people. They meet you, they see you, they engage with you. That's better than the other. So anyway, I think we're going to wrap it up here. Anyway, if you have anything else, any wisdom you'd like to impart to a church planter, if someone was to get started here in the next 90 days, what would you tell them?
I would say put your family first. Don't burn your family out trying to get this started, because you know your family is your first mission field, and you want to make sure, you know, it's going to be a lot on your family. So don't do too much. Be resilient. Don't get discouraged. Just keep swinging. And then don't focus too much on the results. Just walk in your calling and walk in what you're doing, and just tell God, you know, it's between you and Him, and whatever the results are is what they are. But you know, you're committed to Him first, and you're committed to your family, and just have fun with it. That's probably the last thing I would say, is just have fun with it, have a good time, have some laughs, try to, you know, not take yourself too seriously, and just enjoy it. And so that you are doing something you love to do. Don't let the work of God become a burden to you and your family. So that would be what I would say.
Awesome. Well, thank you, Pastor Cosme. What's your church website?
It is rcbakersfield.com.
rcbakersfield.com. Do you have any trinkets or anything you'd like to sell on our podcast? Do you have any book?
No, I'll have to come up
mugs?
No.
any anything. Hats, apparel.
A GoFundMe link.
You got anything.
No, no, just go. Just click the give. Click the give.
That's right. That's right. The give button. RCBakersfield.com. Thank you, Pastor Cosme, for coming. And thank you all for joining us here at Groundwork. And we'll look forward to seeing you next time. See you later.